Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call time.
Hi.
Yeah, finally did it. Robin Williams.
It only took you two tries.
Yeah, anyway. Today we are with a friend of mine named Michael Getzler. He is a post-production coordinator for a lovely show called Supergirl.
That sounds like
fun. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
We were briefly talking before we started recording about DJs.
And yeah.
Then that started going into strip club DJs.
Right.
And then that turned into Andrew Ask is saying, did you know that magicians do magic at strip clubs?
Yeah, magicians and comedians. I've known both that have done it at strip clubs. So it's like there are, you know, women wearing next to nothing, if not nothing at all.
Correct.
Depending on the establishment. On a stage, and then there's a guy in the back of the room who's going, pick a card, and... Or, like, two guys walk into a youth hostel. I don't know. That would be a comedian thing.
Right.
But I don't know why I went with youth hostel.
So you can do a private magic show? That's why they're in the back room?
I don't think it's like, come on into the champagne room and let me show you my cups and balls. It's not like that. It's more of a, just, you know. It's like, we want lots of entertainment. Maybe if you go with your kids... And you're like, well, daddy's going to go over here and lose some
money. I think it's a great marketing piece.
And try and meet your new mommy. Her name is Cinnamon. And I'm going to...
Crystal.
I'm going to leave you guys here. Cinnamon with an S.
But we're not here to talk about strip clubs.
Oh. Well, then
not
I will
today.
Take off.
Let's see. Mike, can I call you Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Call me whatever you want, JJ.
Sweet. Cinnamon it is.
Cinnamon with an S. Tell us.
So I met Mike. We were just briefly talking about this. When I was working on Gossip Girl, the last season of Gossip Girl, you came on to work on the pilot of Carrie Diaries,
right,
which kind of piggybacked from Gossip Girl, the whole crew. And then you quickly moved up and started post-coordinating.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
What does a post-coordinator do?
Yeah, what's your deal?
Oh, there's a lot of different things. I think I'm still trying to figure it out. But basically what my job is I overlook everything that, you know, production shoots, and I make sure it all gets to post safely and soundly. Make sure we have all the footage. And as you know, there's so many different components when you're shooting, right, you know, an episode from day to day. So you have your sound and your video, and it's all in different places. So, you know, at the end of a day, well, two times a day. So during, you know, your lunch break and during the wrap, you know, you send all these drives over to your post facility and they put it all together, they sync it up, and then they send it to you. So I kind of, each morning I come into the office and make sure it's all there, ready to go for the assistant editors to prep for the editors. And then also make sure, you know, I get it out to all the executive producers, to the studio, to the network, so they can watch dailies. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, you know, first and foremost in the morning.
Yeah.
But basically, what, you know, other things I do is just prepping everything, making sure everyone that's associated with post, all the sound guys, music guys, they're getting everything they need,
mm-hmm,
and just overlooking the whole process, making sure everyone's aware of what's going on all day long. So making sure my co-producer of post knows when all the meetings are happening and just communicating from A and B and B and C and C and A, making,
right,
sure everyone knows what's going on. Because there's, yeah, just, you know, there's so much going on throughout the day. You're working on three different episodes at a time.
Right.
You just want to make sure everyone knows what's going on all the time.
A lot of people think that in a post crew, it's the editor and the assistant, but there's a lot of people like the co-producer,
right,
and your position, and then also post supervisors.
Correct. Post supervisors.
I don't think we've had a post supervisor on the show, have we? I don't think so.
No. In 62 episodes, we have not had one.
We need to get a post supervisor on the show.
Okay, if you're a post supervisor.
And they have a huge responsibility.
They deal with more of like the end result.
Right. They're more of the video and sound at the end result. Once you lock,
yeah,
a show, I mean, they're hands-on, making sure it all looks pretty, making sure the frame rate is good, and
going into online and making sure.
Right. You go into the online, making sure your online editor is doing everything correctly and making sure there's no gaps or anything. Because sometimes, you know, editor will put some sort of edit in there. They'll put a, I don't know, a fluid motion in there. And so the supervisor has to know that already happened. So when they go into the online, they have to let the online editor know.
Right.
You know, let's make this look pretty.
Very cool.
And then,
I'm not in the post world, really. So I know.
You aren't at all.
No, I don't know anything.
I don't post.
About television.
I don't post.
We have somebody that's
so
that
you're one of those that say, let's fix
us.
It in post.
Yeah. We'll write a really bad script now, and then they'll fix it later. It's out of our hands at that point. That's the stance that I've taken. But I sort of know this, but I don't entirely understand when you're saying an online editor, to me that's like, oh, you're on the internet and you're editing. what exactly is the online editor? What is that term?
So they don't get the show until we lock it, you know. So I can go into the whole process of a show. You have your editor's cut, and you have your director's cut. It goes. Sometimes you do a producer's cut, but sometimes it just goes straight from a director's cut to a studio cut,
right?
Network cut. Once the network sees it and they've approved the cut, you then lock the show. Once you've locked the show, you send it to your post facility where your online editor is, and they will basically make the show high definition.
Okay.
So any sort of little fixes here, and that, like I said, a fluid motion, animat, they're going to touch up, make it look as pretty as possible, smooth as possible. Anything that's missing in a show, like sometimes you have to drop in visual effect shots, they'll drop in the show. We won't do that at our, like the editors of the show will not do that. The online editor will drop in a visual effect shot.
Okay.
Making sure the timing is right. And then from there, you move it on, you pass it on to your final colorist.
That's interesting. Going back to it for a second, that you said that sometimes they don't do a producer's cut?
Yeah, they don't do like an official producer's cut. The producers will always see it.
Oh, got it.
They'll give their notes, but they don't do an official producer's cut.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the producers will always, they want to see that before a director sees it. They want to see that right away. But you have to give your director days. They have to get their official cut out, and then producers will look at it, give their notes, and then you get it onto the studio.
Yeah.
One thing I failed to mention that
we can start over.
Can we?
Good morning, early call timers. Good morning. Strip clubs.
Today we have Mike on the couch, and he works for Supergirl. So it's a new show.
Speaking of strip clubs,
I don't know. I don't know if I mentioned that in the beginning.
Supergirl.
Coming to you, CBS, before Scorpion.
Pick a card.
Yeah.
We're all over the place.
I think you guys are airing before Scorpion.
I don't know exactly when Scorpion's airing. We're airing Mondays, 8 p.m.
Okay, yeah.
We don't air till our first episode is going to be October 26th. Tune in, everybody.
Oh, my birthday's on a Saturday this year. Sorry. That made sense in my head.
Supergirl is before.
What did you fail to mention?
That he was working on Supergirl.
Oh, you did? I thought you said that.
Yeah, sure, I think you did. But it's okay to mention again. We're just advertising the show.
It's
a
high profile show.
Supergirl on CBS?
Yeah.
Mondays at 8 p.m.?
Yes, you're right.
Debuting October 26th?
26th, yeah. And guess what?
What?
We have a friend that works on that show too.
Supergirl?
Mm-hmm.
Who?
Harry Jurgen.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Mike. And Mike. Well, we're talking about that right
and
now.
And Mike as well.
You guys already forgot about me.
Yeah.
Baby, I'll never forget about you.
call every guest baby at one point during the course of an episode.
I probably could.
From here on out.
Baby.
Yeah.
Baby.
Harry Jurgen, our first official guest on the Early Call Time podcast.
I have to say it's very interesting that we've done 62 of these episodes, and it's very rare that we're talking to someone that one of us has not met or worked with before. Like, most of them have been...
Well, yeah, they're usually our friends.
Well, yeah, it's just impressive that it's like people go, oh, it's hard to like get out there and how do you meet people and all that stuff? And it's like we still have a roster of people that we have not talked to yet
that's a good point.
Know and have worked with. So.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, you think about it, like it kind of feels like a small community, but at the same time, I mean, there's so many people out there that you've never come across. And there's so many different parts of a production that it's hard to know everybody and everything that they do exactly. And they're,
sure.
But like we had this guy Hunter on a couple weeks ago and he was talking about stuff that he'd worked on and then Jay just talking about stuff and it's all of a sudden they're like, oh, they have like six or seven mutual friends in common that they've worked with. So And Hunter, we'd never met before.
And you know some of those mutual friends. Matt Miller was one of them, from Chuck and Forever. And it's kind of weird how all
like there's a ton of people, but it's also everybody's. It feels like a lot of people know each other.
Yeah, like the other day we were hanging out having lunch. I was sitting next to Harry, and down the hall there's this new show called Blood and Oil that just moved in. They're posting writers. And this editor named Tim Good came over.
Oh, Tim.
Tim.
I
know you know him. But I had only met him, I think, so briefly. It was probably like 4 years ago. So I really didn't count him as meeting him.
Yeah.
So Harry introduced us. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And Harry's like, yeah, I work for Brody, you know, on Gossip Girl. And so Tim was like, oh, cool. So it was just cool that, you know, there's a little triangle somehow. Like, because you worked on a show or you knew somebody over here, you kind of like are all interconnected somehow.
Yeah. He's working on Blood and Oil. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is he editing or is he?
Yeah, he's editing.
He's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. That's so cool.
Great for him, man.
We need to get him on the show. I think I emailed him and he's busier than I am.
That's hard to accomplish.
It's hard.
You're very busy.
Thanks.
So how did you get started in this whole thing? Where are you from? What's how did your parents meet each other?
Did you come from royalty?
I came from a family of people working in the entertainment industry.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, I didn't know I wanted to ever be in the entertainment industry growing up, but I grew up around it. So my grandfather was a vice president of Viacom.
Wow.
Viacom. I don't know how they say it anymore. Everyone says it differently.
The check still comes.
Right, right. So,
still the same, really.
Yeah. So he was part of, he won like a Golden Globe for The Cosby Show.
Oh, wow.
And he was part of, you know, producing Yogi Bear back in '50s or '60s.
That's crazy.
I had no idea. So that was pretty cool.
Wow.
Got a legend over here. Well, his family, at least.
So my...
Not you. People you know.
Jokes.
Are very interesting.
Jokes, baby. Jokes.
Yeah, people I know, but not me exactly. So my mother, she's an art director. And my father, he's still working, but he's been a UPM.
Okay.
Cool.
He did like MacGyver, West Wing.
What?
Yeah. 24.
We're going to talk about that for the rest of the episode. So MacGyver.
No shit. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's been pretty cool. I kind of grew up around the industry.
Can we just have your whole family on?
We should have actually just had all of us sitting together in one episode.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. Oh. So yeah, I kind of grew up around it, you know, with my mom, and I used to go visit her on set as a kid growing up, and it didn't seem that special at the time. I mean, I'd be, you know, sixth, seventh grade going to set, and I was like, oh, this is cool, but I didn't honestly care back then. I just thought it was really cool, and I was around actors and directors. I was like, whatever. So I grew up kind of never being starstruck or anything like that.
Well, that's good. That's good.
And then as I got older, I started to, you know, watch a little bit of TV. So when I ever started realizing everything, my mom was working on The X-Files. So she did The X-Files for 4 seasons when it moved back to L.A.
Is your mom Gillian Anderson?
No, she's not. But okay. I have a good story about Gillian Anderson.
I have to have your mom sign my X-Files poster then.
All right.
Because I have a few people that have worked on X-Files that have signed it.
No shit.
Yeah. So when she comes over...
Let's do it.
Which is now happening.
We'll have her come over and sign my poster.
Yeah, let's do it.
That's awesome. I'm glad we
learn something new every day,
yes,
JJ.
I'm glad we're learning that today while we're recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So good story about Julianne. I was visiting them at set one day at Fox, and my favorite thing about visiting my mom on set was craft service.
Obviously.
So I'd go over there and I would just raid the table, and people would probably look at me like, who is this kid? Like, he obviously doesn't work on the show. And I was like, I didn't care. Like, I didn't even notice them. I was just like, I can do whatever I want.
Right.
And so I was eating this a double chocolate chip cookie, where the cookie is actually chocolate and this chocolate chip. So it's all brown.
I'm familiar.
And
I'm a fan.
Yeah. Well, it leads me to my next part.
Okay.
So I'm eating the chocolate chip cookie, and I'm like just shoving it in my mouth. And I'm not even going to give it a care in the world. And I have it, you know, all in my front teeth. And all of a sudden, Gillian Anderson comes up to us. And my mom goes... Oh, Jillian, hey, meet my son Mike. And I smile. I have brown chocolate chip cookie all over my teeth. And I just smile, hi. And that was a very embarrassing moment in my life. And then, you know, I felt really crappy about it.
Yeah.
And about 10 minutes later, my mom's like, oh, I have to go talk to the construction coordinator real quick. Just stand here like for a second. All of a sudden, I get like a pat on the butt. and Gillian Anderson like walked past me and looked back and gave me a smile, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
You got assaulted on the set of X-Files by Gillian Anderson. Yeah. That's amazing.
Lucky.
And it's fine. I met David Duchovny at one point, but that was like a few seasons later, and he was directing an episode. And nice guy, and it was cool. So
very tall.
Yeah, very tall. Super nice guy. And so I mean, growing up, I was never starstruck, but it was always nice. I always appreciated meeting people like that. But so like I started watching TV I started watching X-Files, which was kind of a hit show back then. And that's when I really started to notice television and the writing. And I was like, this is really cool stuff. And that's kind of what pushed me into wanting to work in the entertainment industry one day. I didn't know what I wanted to do exactly, but I was like, oh, this could be really cool one day.
Yeah.
That's how I always knew I wanted to be in the industry, and that's how I kind of grew up around it. But I grew up in Santa Monica, California, right over the hill on the west side. I went to high school out here in Sherman Oaks, Notre Dame. And,
nice.
Yeah.
On the Burbank Boulevard.
Yeah.
Or no, is that?
No, it's on Riverside.
Right. It's a parallel street.
Yeah. Catherine McPhee graduated from there,
She did.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I remember when she was on whatever that.
Whoa.
American Idol or whatever. They came to our school.
You should bring over a yearbook sometime. And we just go through the yearbook and say, there's that someone famous. There's someone famous. That would be cool.
This guy's dead. It happens.
So, it's true. That's true.
So I went to University of Arizona. I went there to play football and then ended up having a few knee surgeries and playing rugby for 4 years. Came back and I was like, I was a history major. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was in college, and I was like, crap, what the hell am I going to do?
History major.
Yeah, I was like, everyone's like, well, you can teach. I was like, I don't want to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And like American history or just history in general?
Just history in general. I was fascinated with World War II.
Okay.
I really enjoyed it, but I was like, I don't see a career in this whatsoever, and I was like trying to figure it out. And I was like, well, I've always loved the entertainment industry. I kind of grew up around production. I don't know exactly how it works, but I like the culture of it. So I started figuring things out. I was like, well, I'm going to be a PA. I'm going to be a PA, and I'm going to work my way up to become hopefully one day an executive producer. And that was kind of my little short-term plan. Mm-hmm. Came back to LA and just started trying to contact anybody I could to become an office PA, a set PA, any sort of type of PA, because I know that's the way you get in.
Yeah.
And so I got a job one day. I was actually visiting my mom at Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And she was working on a show called Heart of Dixie that was on the CW. Yeah. And visiting her one day for lunch, and randomly she's like, oh, do you want to go meet like the production coordinator? Maybe, just put your name in there in the mix, in case something happens. I was like, no, at that point I couldn't find a job, and it was so tough. And the season, it was like end of August, so all shows had already been up and running.
Right.
And I was struggling to find anything, and I was almost ready to give up and try and find a different career. And I went to the production coordinator. I was like, hey, I'm Mike. If you, any PA positions become available, let me know. I'll email you my resume.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, we actually just had a PA that quit 5 minutes ago. Like, would you
literally
be,
5 minutes?
Literally 5 minutes ago, and she told me that the DP of the show had come up to this PA and was like, "Hey, you could be an actor. You're a good looking guy." And like, literally, I guess his ego got to him so quickly that he like up and quit his job like on the spot.
Wow.
Speaking of people that are dead.
Well, that timing worked out perfectly for you.
Yeah. So a lot, a lot of advice I give is people always say, well, how did you get your job? And I said, honestly, timing.
Yeah.
It was nice that I got a drive on from my mother to go visit her for lunch, but she didn't do anything, I guess. Right. I was just happened to be there visiting her, and timing of the whole thing just happened to work out. So
how long ago was that?
That was 2011.
Okay.
Wow. So 4 years ago?
Yeah.
And then, I can't even remember.
But that was for production.
That was a office production assistant. Okay. So I did that for a whole year, which was nice because.
Were you in those fake houses?
That was in the fake houses on the Warner Brothers lot.
I love that street.
Yeah, it's very Pleasantville.
Like Midwest America, but
It does.
Actually,
is that where you grew, is that kind of where you grew up in Indiana?
Did you grow up
sort of
in Warner Brothers?
Yeah. It kind of looks like upscale version of where I live.
Right.
Yeah. But
it was funny because they always used to have the Warner Brothers tours come around on that street and say, "Oh, they shot this here," and "Oh, they shot that there," and they always stopped at our office. And some, I don't know why they always picked our place, but they said, "Oh, well, the brick on that house is actually fake." And we always used to run, like sometimes we would literally run out there, and before the tour guide could say that, we would all go ruin it for the they're fake, don't worry, they're gonna tell you that in 2 seconds they're fake, and we would like pat them and be like, "See, it's not real." So I did that for the first season. It was a great experience. I was able to just kind of see how all the different departments worked, and I wanted to kind of figure out where I wanted to go. And I still didn't really know. Mm-hmm. I was like, "God, I don't know what interests me. Do I want to be on set working till 2 a.m.? Do I want to be a prop master? Do I want to work in construction?" I honestly had no idea. But I learned how a show works from day to day, getting the call sheets out and just how the flux of everything. And so I became, you know, pretty good friends with the post supervisor at the time. His name was David Waco.
Oh, yeah. I know David.
And so him and I just kind of became friends, and their offices were right across the street. And so I saw him a lot. And, you know, towards the end of the season, he's like, "Do you have any plans during hiatus or for next season?" And I was like, I don't know. Should I? You know, I just thought this was coming back and then I'd have a job again. He goes, "Well, you know, regardless, you know, I'm going to go and do this pilot called Carrie Diaries. Would you be interested in being the PA on it in post?" I was like, "Well, I don't know anything about post." He's like, it's not that hard. Like, you know, your lunch orders, coffee, picking things up, delivering things, kind of the same thing you've been doing, but just a little different." I was like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And in the back of my head, I was like, "Well, maybe this could be some sort of new avenue I could venture out to." He's like, "Well, come, you know, in a few days, come meet the post producer," which is Jonathan Brody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay, cool." So I go over there and I meet with him, and Brody was very, very cool guy. I remember walking into his office and he was watching, I don't know, March Madness.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, "All right, I think I can get along with this guy." And I think the whole interview was talking about sports.
Yeah.
And I was like, in my head, I'm like, if this is how I think it's going, I think I just nailed it. You know, this isn't too bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was like, "So are you available?" And I was like, "Well, actually, my girlfriend and I have this cruise planned out right in the middle of the pilot." And I had no idea how pilots worked. I didn't know that they were super, you know, 2 months intense. Of crazy intense work. Yeah. I was like, "Oh, yeah, is it okay if I leave, you know, for a week, you know, during final sales delivery, basically." Mm-hmm. He's like, "Yeah, I don't think that's going to work out. But, you know, I'd like to give you the job, but, you know, I don't think you can leave for a week." And I was like, "Okay." So I call my girlfriend. I was like, "Yeah, we're not going on this cruise. We're going to have to push this a little bit if you want my career to do okay, because this is a job and I need to do this job." And ended up, you know, I did the pilot, learned how, you know, did everything. I started to learn how post worked a little bit, and I ended up liking it. I really, really liked how, you know, the post department worked. And, you know, the pilot got picked up, and Brody was like, "Hey, you know, we're going to be doing Gossip Girl season 6. You know, we'll need a PA, and then it's going to go right into Carrie Diaries season 1. Like, do you want to do this?" And I was like, "Absolutely, let's do it." And I kind of felt like at the time that was like the right, it felt like it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
For me, my career, I was very interested in, I kind of liked, saw his position. I was like, maybe I could be a post producer one day. I think I really like this. So, you know, took a leap of faith and did it. And here I am today, you know, few years into post production as a coordinator.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Awesome. You mentioned the cruise thing, because when we were doing the first season of the show I'm on now, last year, I was supposed to go on a cruise with my family, and it was going to be over Christmas, and we had a giant stack of notes and changes that we'd received from the network, and we're like, "Oh, I think we're going to have to work over Christmas." I've always wanted to go on a cruise. It's like the thing I've always wanted to do, and it was like, "Man, it looks like we're going to be working the week of Christmas," and so I had to back out, and then
I remember.
You know, and I ended up working half of one day that week. But it's like just being available and like doing it with a smile and being like, "Well, I'm making a sacrifice now, but it's going to, you know, pay off later." Right. So,
did you ever go on a cruise?
No. When I write my episode this season, that's the first thing I'm going to do with that paycheck. Actually, my dad keeps saying, "I owe you a cruise." And I'm like, "Yeah, you do." So.
Mark Padovino always would say, "If you want work, just plan a vacation."
Yeah,
it always works out.
Always does.
Yeah, I don't know. Cruises are they're kind of a and weird thing. Yeah.
I just like buffets. And
oh,
boats.
Then you love it.
Buffets and boats. That's really all I need.
Yeah, then you love it. But some people hate it. Yeah. Some people love it.
Yeah. Do you have any plans on one and still being a post producer or what are you thinking?
That's a $1 million question, JJ.
Yeah.
I'm glad and I'm not glad that you asked that because I wake up every single morning and I'm like, is this what I want to keep doing?
Sure.
I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know. Right now I'm just trying to working hard at what I'm doing, trying mm-hmm. to learn as much as I can, trying to become a post supervisor at the same time.
Right.
But there's a part of me that is kind of ready to move away from the production side.
Mm-hmm.
and work for the studio or work for a network, but more the studio. And I've been working, I've only worked on Warner Brothers shows. It's been kind of a blessing that I've had a consistent job the last 4 years, which is, it's tough to come by in this industry.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I love having a hiatus. You know, it's nice having a month, month and a half, 2 months off and during summer. Thank mm-hmm. God it's not during winter, but during summer.
Yeah.
You know, it's really nice. You can do your own thing, and it's just a good break. People don't realize, though, that, you know, in production, it's a grind every single day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you get hiatus, you take some time off, and, you know, but it's kind of annoying because everyone's like, oh, my God, like, you're this adult who has, like, a summer break. And it's like, yeah, but you don't realize what I went through the rest of the year.
Yeah, the other 10 months of my life.
Yeah, when you're getting off at 5 o'clock every day and you're having your life, you take a Friday off, which, you know, we don't get to take days off.
Yeah.
It's really tough to do that. So I'm kind of, for my career, I'm starting to look at something more stable where I have a year long mm-hmm. job. And I like how the corporate side of everything works. I'm kind mm-hmm. of leaning towards that. Like my personality is starting to, I don't know, likes it a little bit more than where I am now. The stress every single day.
Right.
You know,
studio work would be fun. I mean,
right. Not everyone loves it because everyone in the production, you know, it's a very creative job. And everyone says, well, if you work for a studio, you're not very creative. You're just like the man.
The man makes a lot of money.
Though. Right. The man makes a lot of money. I'm looking for something stable. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm still trying to figure everything out.
And you're young.
I'm young. But I'm not young. So. I have no hair. I'm losing my hair.
It's okay, baby.
I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack soon.
You've aged 5 years just since you sat down on our couch.
You should go to a cardiologist and make sure that your heart is okay.
This reminds me of an episode of MacGyver where a woman...
Someone like MacGyver.
...broke some kind of serum or something, and then she aged really fast, and she died on screen.
That's,
and
that's
her dog
terrible.
Died first. Mm. Blame your dad. Because obviously he's the one that made that call.
Seriously, I gotta talk to him.
That's
about
how
that
works, right?
That's sure. That's bad. Him and I are having a talk later.
Yeah.
Good. Tell him to give me a call.
Yeah.
I have a few dozen questions for him.
So, as a post coordinator on Supergirl, I will plug that again. CBS, 8 p.m.
Mondays.
October 26th. Is it any different working on that show than, let's say, Carrie Diaries or...
Oh, it's completely different.
How is it completely different?
We have an entire visual effects department in post, which I've never had before. So I've worked on shows like Gossip Girl, Carrie Diaries, Mysteries of Laura. These are more kind of walk and talks.
Mm-hmm.
And so with a show like Supergirl, you have, you know, in between 150 to 200 to 250 visual effects shots per episode.
Wow.
So it's kind of crazy how a lot more is going on all at once. And the executive mm-hmm. producer's Greg Berlanti, he wants to see it. These shots like right away. And it's like, well, we don't even, you know, we haven't put the show together yet, you know,
right.
But you're kind of pulling shots. You're figuring all this out as it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pulling, you know what shots are going to be visual effects. You're pulling the shots. You're having your visual effects company,
mm-hmm.
you know, start working on these way ahead of time. But, you know, then there's changes to the shots, and then they want it right away. And so there's a whole other part of the process now that I haven't really, you know, been involved with in the past. But it's cool. It's really, really exciting to have that work on a show that can do all that.
And we have
an entire different department. I'm working with 5 people within our department that I've never had to deal with before.
Right. Now do you... when do you get your camera masters? After the show is completely finished, for like, let's say you have episode 102.
Right.
Do you get those camera masters the same day, or do you get them after principal photography is finished?
After principal photography is finished.
Okay.
What's a camera master?
It's basically like if you were shooting on film, let's say it was just, that would be the negative that was that came out of the camera.
What's film?
I think we need to introduce you to another podcast.
Called What is Film?
What is Film? Basically, it's like the raw stuff that the camera is shot.
Right.
And on top of that, do you guys pull your own shots, or do you send them out of house and have them do clip pulls?
We pull them ourselves, okay. but then we send those to a visual effects on call.
We send it
to them, and they start working on them. But everyone's working, you know, as a team to figure out what shots we're pulling.
Right.
And then we.
Okay.
Are you referencing like the director saying, "I like this shot and that shot"? Or is this something different?
It's more of, I don't know.
I know there's a lot of different aspects of it, which I'm still kind of learning a little bit at the same time.
Yeah, well, after you get a cut together
right.
that people are liking, even if it's just the editor liking mm-hmm. it,
right?
And they know, okay, well, I know that this needs to be a visual effect.
Okay.
So this shot, we need to send to visual effect, or the visual effect.
The house
or the visual effects department. And that's the shot that they're going to use to do the visual effect on.
Got it.
So they need the raw camera masters that include, you know, the person and maybe the green screen or the blue screen behind them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to take that and they have to cut out a mat and then they put stuff behind it. And there's a whole bunch of stuff involved with it. And especially in TV shows, when there's such a big quick turnaround, you have to have a crew that's in sync with everything.
Well, they start figuring that stuff out really quickly. I mean, they write it into the script, so you know in the script before they even shoot it, oh, that's going to be a visual effect shot.
Right.
Whereas some
right.
shows like Carrie Diaries, it's not really visual effects. The only thing that's really visual effects is like, oh, maybe she has some bad skin on her face. Like,
yeah.
Or we'll clean that up later on. And you don't even use, that's not always a visual effects thing. It's kind of.
Your online editor might do some of that.
Right, right. Exactly. So, you know, it's written in the script and you see dailies, you know, right away there's like this huge green screen and our main mm-hmm. actress is floating on these wires. You're like, oh, obviously that's a huge right. visual effects shot.
Right.
So when the editor gets it and she kind of starts cutting a scene together, you know, she'll put a scene together and then she'll talk to the post producer and the visual effects coordinator and supervisor and producer and the executive producers are like, okay, we know this is going to be a huge visual effects shot. Even before I put my cut together, what are you envisioning for the shot? And then they'll mm-hmm. send that shot to our visual effects company,
mm-hmm.
you know, the post house.
You guys are working on Encore, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can start creating that shot already, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't even have to wait till a cut has been put. You don't even have to wait for the editor's cut. You can just start right. doing that right away and working on it. It takes a while.
Yeah.
And then we're also doing these, you know, these human scans where you take one of the villains of an episode and you scan their whole body, their head, their entire body, so you can get them, you know, like, this crazy digital image of them
mm-hmm.
and you start working with their crazy, whatever, you know, bug or villain, whatever they're going to be, you can start working on that so you can put it on the show as quickly so the executive producer can see it quickly.
Now, for people that don't know, Berlanti also worked on, or he's also the executive producer for The Flash.
Correct.
As well, which is also a huge show with visual effects and that there's, you know, hundreds of visual effects for the show. So,
He's got, I believe, six shows on the air right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he is so spread thin. Like, it's great. Amazing. He's very successful. He's very, very good at what he does.
Yeah.
And it's really exciting working at his camp, you know, working for the Berlanti camp.
Because we're trying to get your whole family on, and we were talking.
What does your cousin twice removed do in the industry?
How well do you know Greg Berlanti?
Yeah. Are you related to him?
Yeah. But he's someone that we had talked about. He's like kind of the wish list kind of guys that we would love to have on the show because he does have six shows and he's super busy.
Awesome.
What we need you to do is just do a horrible job at Supergirl so it gets canceled. That opens up his schedule a little bit and then we can squeeze him in.
We just need 45 minutes.
Let's just get him here. I mean, we'll get him in here.
Great.
Somehow. We'll kidnap him.
Just got to talk to Harry.
Or we can tell him. Maybe he's interested in, like, you know, the strip club magic show thing.
He could be.
Who knows?
I'm just going to send him an email and say strip club magic question mark and then put our address in the body of the email.
Yeah.
And a time.
Yep.
And see what happens.
You never know.
That's how it's done. Do you, once the show starts airing, is that going to change how things are going at all? Or are you guys pretty much on the same kind of like, we're just sticking to what the plan is?
Yeah, no, you kind of have to stick to the plan because once it starts airing, it's kind of when it gets crazy. Like right now it's crazy, but it's not as crazy as it's going to be because we're still, we haven't even done an editor's cut of 102 yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we're done shooting 102, but I mean, we don't air till end of October, which is kind of a long time. And that, and October 27th, what did I say? 26th. Jesus. That's CBS. We're actually airing. That's the pilot, which is basically already done. We have a few things to touch up, take some time out of it.
Right. I hear the Foley, and that's great, though.
Yeah.
Sorry, go
Greg,
on.
Greg, what was it?
Greg Barbanel?
Yeah, what was his episode number?
Not a clue.
I'm going to guess it's like 48.
You can guess, but I don't know.
Anyway. So I mean, once you get to the point of airing an episode, you're up against air. So we're airing, I believe, 8 episodes in a row.
Okay.
And so once you've delivered your first episode, you know, you think you could celebrate a little bit and be like, oh, you know, that little piece of the project is finally done. Like let's take a second to just like cool down, relax a little bit. No, it is still full go. Like you have so many deadlines to meet.
Do you kind of dread once those air dates come because then you're really like
the stress levels are really up. You're like, because you have to hit these deadlines.
Yeah,
you can't miss a deadline.
Right.
You know. So once you deliver one episode, I mean, you're always working on 2 or 3 episodes at a time, anyways. Yeah. But as you get further and further into the season and you're airing episodes, you're further along in the process of each show. You're not just shooting an episode. You're onlining one show.
Mm-hmm.
You're mixing another show. You're recording ADR for this show and color correcting this show. It's hard to keep, and that's part of my job is making like knowing everything that's going on all the time, like making sure, you know, the stage has the CCM, you know, and everyone has their quick times they need, and everyone has this.
A CCM is a color time master, also.
Oh, you call it CTM, CCM,
yeah, color corrected master, yeah. For the people that don't know,
okay,
yeah,
that sounds like a terrible job that I would never want to have.
There's just a lot of different components happening all the time. So sometimes it's hard to, you know, for everyone to know what's going on at the same time.
Yeah.
How do you kind of juggle all that? How do you keep track of everything?
I write everything down. I have 10, 15 to-do lists and all around my office, Google Docs. I mean, you literally have to, my phone, you have all these different things that you can have access to while you're at work or while you're at home.
Right.
Just whiteboards everywhere. And then you have, you know, people like I have Mike, a PA. We're actually hiring a second PA.
Oh.
So, you know, you have these people that are kind of below me that I kind of manage a little bit too as well. They're helping you out. And it's just making sure you're on top of everything all the time. You have to be proactive all the time. You have to be one step ahead of everybody because I anticipate what my boss is going to ask me or what my supervisor or what my producer is going to ask me. So I'm always like, okay, so tomorrow we have this meeting. So she's going to ask me, do we have the notes for this yet or do we have the schedule for this yet? So I better get that before she even asks me.
Right. Because it looks better on you if you're like, oh, yeah, it's already done.
Right, right, yeah. Exactly. But then they're already on the next thing like, oh, so what's going on with 107 though? I'm like,
yep.
Oh, let me find out.
I am finding out that working with Jonathan Brody has caused me to be like that.
Yeah.
And some people were like, oh, that's, you know, I might say that is a bad thing, like, oh, he's really hard to work for or something like that. But he's not hard to work for at all.
He's really good at what he does.
He knows what he wants.
Right.
And after you work for him for a couple of weeks, you realize, yeah, okay, that's what I need to do.
Right.
And it makes you better.
Right. Well, I'd say he was my mentor, you know, in post-production, getting to where I am today. And I'd still be working for him if it wasn't for, you know, just the way schedules work sometimes. I honestly say, I mean, he taught me, you know, a lot of what I know today, and you know, I'm you know, successful because of that. Taught me a lot of the basics and how to be good in post.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get him on the show. I don't know if he'd want to do it though.
Yeah, I was thinking about that driving over here today.
I don't think he's the kind of guy that would want to talk.
I was thinking about that driving over here. I was like, I wonder if JJ's ever tried getting Jonathan Brody on
the show.
We picked
up ribs for him, man.
We did. Oh, he owes us.
We drove to Compton for that guy.
For what?
For barbecue. We went
Bledsoe's.
Bledsoe's when it was down in the it still is in Compton. That's where we would go get good barbecue.
Yeah.
And we brought it home for him once, and he came by and picked it up. And yeah.
But he didn't stay?
He didn't stay, no.
Well, he took it for surgery, so he was in his car.
Oh,
yeah. He had, like, leg surgery.
Knee surgery.
Yeah, knee surgery.
Yeah, and...
So I'll give him a pass on that.
Yeah, so he had to take it back for Kate. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
As well.
Oh, I just found out from Harry that he's working on Lucifer.
Yeah, with Mark.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know Mark was on, but he's at the Burbank Studios with me in a different building, so I'm going to go over there sometime soon.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, do you... I was a page at NBC with a guy named Scott Siebert.
Yeah.
Do you know
him? Works on Flash.
Yeah, he works on Flash.
He's a supervisor on Flash.
Yeah.
Awesome guy.
Cool.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a long time, but...
Yeah, he's doing awesome. I really like Scott, and their coordinator is Ryan Bosch. Really cool guy.
Okay.
So I like, and their producer is Jeff Garrett.
Yep, Jeff's wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful guy.
Yeah, he's really good.
Run into him every once in a while.
Yeah. So
are all of Greg's shows kind of in the same place?
They have all of Greg's posts and writers basically at the Burbank Studios.
Right.
And we're actually, Supergirl's actually shooting, we're like one of his only, I think the only show that's shooting at Warner Brothers in L.A.
Are shooting in L.A.?
Yeah, we are shooting at Warner Brothers. And so it was kind of frustrating that we didn't get to, like, our post office and the writers wasn't on the Warner Brothers lot.
Yeah.
Because it's really cool being, you know, working there. It's really convenient and nice. But he wants to keep, it would make sense. He keeps everything at Burbank Studios with all his Flash, Mysteries of Laura, Blind Spot. So he has all these shows that are over there.
Did you guys get tax credits or something? How did that work out that they were able to shoot in L.A.?
I don't know why.
Hmm.
But I think, you know, it's the city. It takes place in National City. It's a fictitious city. I think a lot of the L.A. surroundings just kind of fit what they were envisioning for the show. But yeah.
Gotcha.
It's nice to be in the same place where a show shoots.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, like my mom, I mean, she's in Blenheim. They're in Park City right now. In the last, like, 3-4 years as an art director, you have to be on set. So she's been going into Detroit for 8 months at a time. She was in Atlanta for a while doing Red Band Society. So it's like, she goes, and so she came in this weekend just, you know, visiting or whatever. But it's a whole new world out there right now.
Yeah.
You know, in production.
Yeah, definitely. Especially Atlanta. We were talking with Hunter. It's it's kind of blowing up in Atlanta, the production scene. And post it's not, but post can be here with the writers. So
But I was talking to an assistant editor, Jesse Ellis. And he
works on Daredevil.
He does, And he was telling me that he thinks, and he's predicting, and it's already, he said it, he's seen it once now already, but they're already starting to outsource post-production to, like, India.
Really?
What? Yeah. Yeah, so I was like, oh, man.
We got to sell this place.
Yeah.
I got to go.
Yeah. Oh, so you never know. You never know what could happen.
Right. Oh man.
Speaking of horror stories, you had one to share with us.
Yeah.
It's been around for a while.
Interesting.
This is kind of similar to the one that Hunter told us a couple weeks ago actually about
sleep deprivation of sorts.
Anyway, go ahead with
So
this is pretty cringeworthy.
Yeah. It just kind of sucks. Because here's the part, and I'll tell the story, but I'm reminded of the story every single day because what the object was, when I pull into my garage, I see it right there. My car lines up with it, and I look at it every single day. And it's very
simple. A reminder to sleep at night.
Yeah. So I just got done working on a pilot called Ground Floor on TBS for Doozer Productions, Bill Lawrence's company.
Lucky.
Yeah, really.
Is Bill nice, by the way?
Bill's awesome. Yeah.
I've met Bill.
He is hilarious. And he has, like, the no asshole rule. I mean, he's a really cool guy to work for.
He's got that too?
He's so cool. Sweet.
No, but he enforces that rule, like, no asshole. And his right-hand man's Jeff Ingold.
Mm-hmm.
Really funny guys. And so we just got done working on this pilot. And, you know, pilots, it's like 2 months of a sprint. You're exhausted. You're up. You know, before you're delivering your final sales, you're up all night QCing everything, making sure everything is perfect. And 2 months goes by, and I'm packing up all my stuff at Warner Brothers. And I also have a knee surgery in like 2 days, so I have that weighing on my mind, and I'm just so burnt out at that point.
Right.
I had a bike that a beach cruiser with a little basket. That I kept. I had Warner Brothers.
Do you just cruise around the lot sometimes?
Oh yeah,
because that's just my dream.
It was awesome. I cruise around the lot, and like you don't even have to put pay as long as you have the basket. Everyone's like, "Yeah, you know what you're doing."
Yeah,
no one's gonna stop you. You know, I have to go to deliver stuff sometimes.
Sure.
But So I'm putting my bike on my bike rack, and you know, I'm so tired that I thought I hooked up the bike on the bike rack properly. And so I start driving home, and you know, everything's fine. I'm just like so happy to be done. I don't even know what the first thing I'm going to do when I get home. You know, I'll probably just go to bed. And I look in my rearview mirror and I see the
bike. 5 p.m.,
yeah.
By the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see the bike kind of bouncing up and down on the bike rack out of my rearview mirror. I was like, oh, shit. But you know, I was like literally 3-4 exits away from my house. I was like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to be fine.
Right.
And next thing I know, I see like one part of the bike come off one of the hooks. And I was like, oh, shit. And I see the other part just come off and the bike's gone. And I'm like, oh, no. And I see the rearview mirror. It's, you know, it's clearly on the freeway about 100 yards back. So I pull over on the emergency, you know, lane as fast as I can. And I was like, God damn it. I can't believe this is happening right now. So I, you know, walk back 100 yards on an emergency lane on the freeway, just like so pissed at this point. And not even just tired. I'm just so mad and pissed at this point. It's like, how can this happen? You know, all this blood and tears and sweat that I put into this show and the last 2 months, I was like, can this really be happening right now? So I walk back 100 yards to go get the bike, and I let kind of a few waves of cars come by. So, you know, just so I can like go and grab it. And it's like kind of like, you know, in the first lane, but on closer to the second lane. So kind of, you know, further out there. And I'm wearing sandals, by the way. And like gym shorts and a t-shirt, and people are probably driving past me like, what is this? This car's fine. What is going on? So I'm about to go get it. I see a little gap where I think I can go get it, but I'm kind of nervous. It's the freeway. I'm wearing sandals. I don't know if I want to run out on the freeway and grab the bike. And I was like, okay, I'll let the next wave of cars come by. And this goddamn SUV just doesn't even try to go into another lane, doesn't slow down, nothing. Just goes right over the bike, just runs right over it. And I just kind of put my hands up over my head and I was like, I cannot believe that just happened.
Sorry, man.
So the bike kind of moved when he ran over it. It kind of moved into the second lane fully. So it was like literally in the middle of the second lane. And I'm like contemplating this, like, is this even worth it for this beach cruiser? I've had so many good times with it. I was like, I can salvage this thing. I can get it. I'll fix it. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I run out there real quick, grab the bike, get off the freeway, put it back on my bike rack.
Hey, you're lucky you weren't killed.
Lucky I wasn't killed. Didn't rock. Didn't hit me. Nothing got to me. I felt invincible for 5 seconds running on the freeway. But I got the bike and now it's sitting in my garage, and I literally see it every single day. Kind of, it's not even that bad, you know. It can actually be fixed, but
yeah,
I still have that thing. It's a reminder to get sleep.
Yep.
And of that goddamn pilot.
That reminds me, I was like, I've had similar experiences. Like, I was doing a show a couple years ago. I was doing like some PA stuff for Discovery Channel, and I was driving home after like a super long shoot. I was totally exhausted. And I ran over this guy's bike on the freeway because I was just almost passed out at the wheel of my 4Runner. And I just want to find that guy, and I just want to punch him right in the mouth. Go, how dare you throw your trash on the freeway in front of my car?
Funny enough, I think we found him.
What a great plot twist.
Thank you for coming on the show, by the way.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. This has been really fun. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, it has. And
we learned all kinds of interesting stuff about your family and you.
You?
And we learned a little something about ourselves.
I don't think you guys like me
today.
Very much.
You?
I'm just kidding.
Do you have any advice for anybody that's trying to be a post coordinator?
Oh, no, nothing crazy. Because I kind of fell into post, so it wasn't like something I had planned for.
Yeah.
Planned for.
There you go.
You know, I what I said earlier about how I got my first PA job is it was a lot about timing.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is hard work, kind of sacrificing a lot of your personal life and just trying to stay positive as much as you can, because whether it's a pilot, whether it's during the season, I mean, you're going to go through some grueling hours and a lot of work, and sometimes it's still not going to be enough, and you kind of just have to keep your head up. Sometimes you got to have thick skin, you know. You might get yelled at, you might not, or you know, you might not always get appreciated. Not everyone's going to always say thank you, but you kind of just have to keep going and know like it's going to be okay, and just keep working hard, and everything will work out.
But I think, if I may, one thing that I took from that story is that if you're out here and you don't know exactly what you're trying to do, is be open to possibilities. Like, it sounded like Post hadn't even really crossed your mind right. until someone said, hey, come work in Post. Right. And you never know.
And that stemmed from networking. I mean,
right.
So you need to also talk to as many people as you can and be interested in what they do. Ask questions. And I think that's something I always tell, like, the PAs that are under me. I'm like, you know what? Don't ever be afraid to ask me questions about what's going on. Like, I don't get annoyed by that. Mm-hmm. Some people may get annoyed by that. You ask them too many questions. But right. ask me as many questions. Like, I don't even care how dumb it is. Just ask me questions, because everything's about communicating. So when you're trying to figure everything out, you know, ask costume designers. Ask the art department, set decorator, you ask the script coordinator. Ask what they do. Mm-hmm. Ask mm-hmm. if they're interested. Ask how they got into what they did, you know, what they're doing today. Because everyone has a different story.
Yeah.
Everyone is different. And it's not always going to be the same story. So you can always kind of use those and put it to your own life and figure it out from there.
That's kind of a little bit about our podcast, too. Everybody's story is a little different.
Yep.
You know, an editor doesn't always have the same.
Well, how did the podcast come to be?
Well, would you like to take that one?
Well, JJ and I used to do a podcast called 10 Minutes with Andrew and JJ, which was just about nothing, basically. It was like the Seinfeld of podcasts.
Yes.
We didn't really have a plan. We'd be like, let's talk about how crazy the freeways are this week. And so that was fun.
Yeah.
And we always liked the banter and stuff. And then we stopped doing that. I moved to England for grad school, and we did a couple while I was over there. But
that was interesting.
Yeah,
you'd have
fun.
To wake up at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so we could record. But you know,
mm-hmm.
and then I came back and we moved in together and fell in love. And
we're expecting a child.
Yes. Who's having the baby?
He is. It'll
be fine. But we just decided we wanted to do another podcast, and we were kind of thinking about just doing the same thing. And then we're talking to Nadav, and he's like, "You guys should have a focus of some kind." And we're like, "You're an idiot."
And then we
hung up the phone, and Dov's like, you guys are the idiots. And then we had a big brawl.
Yep. Yep.
And then we were like, that's not a bad idea, actually. And so we realized we know all these people, and it's hard to get into this industry.
It is hard. Yeah. But I also feel like people like to help out others.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm sure there's, I don't know, maybe you guys have had people that you guys personally don't know, but maybe... Mm-hmm. And maybe that'll come down the road. You'll ask someone else, like, hey, do you know this person? Like, do you know a person in this role? Can you get them on the show?
Right.
Yeah, that's sort of what we've been doing a lot of.
Yeah, Hunter, who we had on 2 weeks ago, I had no idea who he was. I mean, I knew who he was, but I didn't know him personally.
That's harsh, man.
So harsh.
I knew who he was.
He just unfriended you on Facebook.
Fuck, he did. No, a great guy. And we actually have the same agent. And
oh, nice.
So our agent hooked us up, and he came over and talked to us for an hour.
But I've also learned a ton, like, even for selfish reasons. I don't care about the listeners, whatever. No, I do. I love all of
this
you.
This is a big networking opportunity for you.
It is, yeah. That was an enthusiastic nod you just gave me. But it's like there's so much stuff I had no clue, and so now it's fun to go to work, and you just have a better idea. Because I think it makes for a better work environment when you know what people around you are doing, because if they're stressed and pulling their hair out, then it's like, oh, I get why it is that you hate your life right now.
right.
So I can relate to that in some way,
because
I at least get it. So
right. I've always thought that you can do a better job at your current job if you know the whole workflow of how things go together. So... usually when I start working a new job, I usually say, okay, well, I'm doing this, but what happens after I turn it over to someone else?
Right.
You know, and one thing I'd really like to do is shadow somebody that does sound.
Right.
And say, okay, well, I gave you an EDL. What do you do with that EDL? And then, you know, go through that workflow. And then down the line when I'm teaching someone else how to do something, I'm like, oh, well, because they do this and this and this later on. And I don't know. I just feel like you get a more solid, work environment.
Well, it's even like you wanting to go, you know, if you wanted to work for the studio, I personally have a lot more respect for somebody who is in that position and understands what everyone else that's working underneath them is doing.
Right.
Versus just like, you know, there are people out there that clearly don't get it, and they don't understand the hours or what the job entails, and they just, like, they're looking at the budget, for instance, and they're like, that's all that matters to me. That's all that my job. And it's like, that well,
there's a lot of different components to
it. Like what you're doing is going to affect how someone else does their job. Right. And so,
yeah, like part of my job is I make the credits for the show. So I have to send those around to the studio, and each department, not every single department, but a lot of the departments at the studio has to approve. They'd look at them, approve the credits, because there's a whole legal thing to it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so through my process of doing that and finding, you know, stock footage for the show and, you know, and playback during, you know, while you're shooting, you have to get that all that stuff cleared. So I'm constantly contacting the studio, all these different business affairs and legal and current program, I'm contacting them, talking to them all the time. Like, hey, is this okay to do? You know, what if, you know, money wise, can we do something like this? So I'm always, I've talked to all these different people, and through that, the last 2 years or so, I've come to see all these what they do, and I'm like, this is actually really cool. You know, I really like it. I could see myself in one of these jobs, and it's fascinating.
You should come back on the show and you're just like a total studio tyrant and everyone hates you, but you're super rich and successful. It'd be awesome.
I will come back. I promise
like,
you.
Like, come over in your helicopter and I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, it's starting up. He's got to go.
That's our next guest, Michael Winslow, coming in. I'm kidding. We don't have Michael Winslow coming on the show. Awesome.
Well, again, thanks again for being on the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. This was a great... great time.
Yeah. Do you have a Twitter account that people can follow you on?
I'm on Twitter. I don't really go on it much. I do it to follow news, but Michael Getzler, Twitter, Instagram, Getzler, Facebook, Michael Getzler.
All right.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Andrew, do you have a you know what? Today marks a great date for you.
I reached 400 followers on Instagram today.
Look at you.
That's pretty impressive.
And I'm at 396 on Twitter, so I'm on my way up to that little blue check mark.
Nice.
I guess. So proud. Anyway.
No, this was really fun, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm at The Real Zuber.
I'm at JJ. JJ Geiger 711. Nadav is at the...
Very Nadav Show.
Very Nadav Show.
And we're at early call time.
Right. And check out the website. If you haven't been... I don't know how you guys listen to it. Some people listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Sometimes our website, for some reason, won't appear on firewalled establishments like some schools and campuses.
So if that's the case, first, contact your administration at your school and then drop out and go find a school that's accepting of podcasts like ours.
Yep.
And that's the only way we're going to move forward as a country.
That's right. That's right. Check out the website. We have quite a catalog now of people.
It's too many, really.
Well, there's
we've done way too many.
Well, there's 62 now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And I'm sure that there are people on that list that will interest you. So,
and if we have had someone on that you want to have on, shoot us an email.
Yeah.
Earlycalltime@gmail.com.
You know, if you want Greg Berlanti, just email Mike.
Yeah.
And he will get it.
If you are Greg Berlanti,
please be on our show. It'll
what are you
fun.
Doing listening to this? You have work to do.
Yeah. Get back to work, Greg. Until next time.
Listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.